Welcome to the Brian Thomas Podcast. In today's podcast, we're joined by a very special guest, a true fashion icon with a tenure of almost two decades at the very top tier of fashion publishing, fashion features editor and deputy editor of Vogue, Sarah Harris. Sarah was in town to visit the new accessories hall in Brian Thomas, and we sat down to discuss her incredible life at Vogue. Okay, Sarah, welcome to the Brian Thomas Podcast, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's so great to be here.
It's fabulous. And this is my first real life podcast in so long. So what a way to come back to it.
I feel honored.
Yes, well, I am delighted. So tell us, what was it like for you guys during the pandemic? Because it must have been really hard to collaborate collectively when you were all disparate. What was it like for the last while in Vogue?
Yeah, it was... It was crazy. You know, we were all stuck at home, like everyone, and you know, we still had to produce a magazine every month. So we quickly, you know, got used to Zoom calls.
Yeah.
And we all met on there and we talked lots, and you know, we met sort of 2-3 times a day, and then we just had to think about, you know, how to make a magazine when you can't gather people together for mm-hmm. photo shoots. You can't, you know, everyone is locked in their houses. And I remember we were thinking about how to show our collection story, which is a really big fashion shoot every year where we show all the collections. And we decided to go back to our archive and look in our archive and dig out previous fashion images, sort of quite iconic fashion mm-hmm. images. Some were in black and white, some were in color. Some were from 1950s, some were from the 70s. And then we worked with a sort of special effects agency, and they basically took images of the current season runway clothes, and they somehow managed to sort of dress the model in the old archive photograph with that new season look.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, I guess we just had to be, you know, a lot more creative, mm-hmm. a little bit more inventive.
There's a lot of magic.
It differently.
Yeah, there was a lot of people who could work, you know, magic around things like that and become even more creative. But definitely. Our fashion needs changed then as well. And did you have to reflect that?
Yeah, we did. You know, because people, you know, we celebrate glamour, we celebrate dressing up. And for a period, yes, of course, you know, there was a time where no one was going out, no one had a need for those clothes. So we definitely, you know, we definitely had to change our approach to fashion mm-hmm. and what we put in the magazine. But then, you know, we soon sort of discovered that actually people still want a bit of escapism and a bit of glamour from us. So
imagine buying Vogue and looking at lounge suits on every page. How terrible would that be? What a letdown. No, we needed that. We needed you to do what you kept doing. And then tell me about your role. I mean, it is, you know, fantastically glamorous, but incredibly busy. So is there a day in the life that you could describe, or are, you know, are there daily necessities, or is every day different?
Every day is probably very different. Mm-hmm. There are nuts and bolts of making a magazine. You know, we have editorial meetings, and we all look at the covers together. We plan sort of 3-5 months ahead of ourselves. We do, you know, once a month we do the running order of the magazine. So we all sort of 4 or 5 of us come together and we decide, you know, exactly what goes where in the magazine. You know, we do our cover lines meeting where we decide exactly what goes on the cover.
Yeah. Is there ever any, you know, do you ever differ in your opinion on that? Like, what are those meetings like? Because the cover is always so iconic and it's the biggest decision you're going to make.
Yeah.
In any edition.
Yeah.
So is that ever a heated discussion?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a run of, I mean, we always do great covers, I think, but we've had a run of really special covers.
Yeah.
You know, we did Billie Eilish, which was huge.
Amazing.
And it, you know, sort of broke a lot of records on Instagram, and in terms of sales, it was massive. We had Adele recently that kind of amazingly was front page news the next morning. It was like every newspaper had it on their front cover. Lady Gaga, we just have now this month. But every cover is different. And I think that's one of the joys of working at Vogue, the fact that you can have, you know, from 1 month you go from having an activist on the front cover, like Malala, for example, and then next month you've got Lady Gaga. I mean, you know, it's kind of really different worlds, right? And I think your, you know, the cover and the cover lines and the design of the cover has to be different and has to work with your cover star of that month.
And in terms of, you know, the cultural icons that appear, there is that social consciousness that Vogue has always represented. Is that something that collectively you decide, or I don't know, could you hire somebody to direct that?
No, I mean, to be honest, it's all, I mean, you know, I think with a magazine like Vogue, I think it should, and it has always held up a mirror to society and culture, and, you know, it's not just fashion. But I think really that's what Edward has brought to the magazine. You know, I think his manifesto was really to sort of, you know, include everyone, make it more diverse, celebrate different areas of culture that perhaps the magazine hadn't really looked at before.
And in terms of the output of Vogue now, that has changed greatly. I mean, you have worked in that industry for over 20 years. When you were starting off making magazines and now you're making content, it's about Instagram. You know, you mentioned Billie Eilish's cover having a lot of hits, a lot more than a lot of hits. So now it's a very different ask and a different offering. So which do you rather?
I mean, I think, you know, I think they all have to work together, and I think they all have to work, you know, seamlessly in a way that, you know, our cover star, you know, I think people are going to want to see a video with our cover star online. They're going to see content represented on Instagram. They're going to want to see. So I think it's, you know, it's really about thinking about stories now in a 360, you know, approach.
And how, you know, we know of the influence of Vogue, and it is the fashion Bible. For brands, how real is the influence it has on the direction of brands? I mean, do they take it on board? Do they curate their collections to suit what they think you want? It, like, what's it like? What's that relationship like?
We work very closely with brands, certainly. And, you know, when after the shows and we go and do our showroom appointments, you know, the brands will often say to us, you know, what are your favorite pieces? Because they need to organize their sample collection that they're going to keep in London. So they always ask us, you know, what our favorite pieces are from the collection. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think Vogue and the brands probably have the closest relationship in the industry.
So then in terms, you mentioned the shows and the relationship with the brands and those meetings after the shows. Tell me about the fashion weeks. What are the events that you most look forward to?
It's been really great. I mean, this season was actually, it was the first season that we were traveling again a little bit. So it was really nice to be back in Paris for shows. I mean, at the same time, I think, you know, being at home during COVID, I think it was nice to see, you know, how easily so many brands and houses were able to really pivot and show their collections in a new way. And I think sometimes it's just expected that everyone does a fashion show, you know. And I think that's really hard for younger, smaller brands who perhaps haven't got the finances to do that. You know, it's a huge ask and pressure. So I think it was really nice to see them, you know, have the opportunity to present something in a in a different format, whether that was, you know, live streaming a video or making, you know, doing a sort of 20-minute Zoom with various editors, you know, something that felt a lot more intimate. And it was sort of nice to have actually that FaceTime with the designer, as opposed to being, you know, sat in an audience, you know, one of 500 watching a fashion show. Having said that, it was really nice to see the return of physical shows. And I think when you're away from it for sort of 18 months, I think you do miss it. You know, you do miss that theater and that drama and
And the whole spectacle of it all, of which you are a big part. You know, I mean, people look forward to seeing you arriving at those shows, and you have become, you know, really a key part of it for so many fashion lovers. Is there a lot of pressure on you on that side of things? How do you even pack? How do you organize yourself to get over there and get organized?
Well, I've always been a very minimalist dresser, I have to say. I'm a light traveler. I literally take, you know, one small suitcase with me. But I kind of, my approach is to, I do think about, okay, what am I going to wear each day? I check the weather before I go. And then I literally sort of, you know, map out whatever it is, the 6 outfits or the 7 outfits mm-hmm. that I'm going to take. Because I hate the idea of overpacking. And also it saves time, you know, in the morning when you've got, you know,
less
20 minutes
to
get ready. Less to choose from. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's straightforward and it makes it a lot easier. Mm. But yeah, and I, you know, I feel like my wardrobe is one where everything sort of goes with everything. You know, I sort of revolve around white T-shirts and black trousers.
And jeans.
And tailoring and jeans. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I keep it pretty simple.
You
I
had
guess.
That capsule collection nailed long before the rest of us were talking about it. And in terms of, you know, the shows, and you mentioned, you know, some of the smaller brands getting a look in finally, were there any discoveries for you during, you know, that pandemic period where we were just on Zoom watching?
Yeah, I think it was really nice to sort of touch base with lots of those younger brands. And I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, actually, a few of us, Edward included, called round lots of those younger brands. And we sort of said to them, you know, is there anything we can do to help you? And, you know, what are you feeling anxious about? And, you know, tell us ways that we can support you and help. Because I think, you know, I think that's also the job of Vogue, is to really nurture that mm-hmm. young talent. You know, yes, as well as showing the big brands and looking after our big brands and the support that they give us. I think it's really important that we support newer, younger brands.
Yeah, that's amazing. So in terms of your career, and, you know, you have been 18 years in Vogue.
Yeah.
And before that, you were a Tattler and worked with Natalie Massenet.
Yeah.
She left, obviously, to set up Net-a-Porter and, you know, VC helping newer brands now. Did you ever consider it? Did you ever consider your own brand, your own business?
I mean, I guess I'd be lying if I said I'd never thought about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think it's a nice idea, possibly, maybe at some point. I mean, I'm not thinking about doing it now at all. But I think, you know, I think if you do work in fashion, you always think, oh, you know, where's the gap? Or what if I did that? Or I don't know. I think you're always looking, you know, and when you look at clothes every day, you sort of, you think about how something could be perfected or could be, you know, I think that's natural as an editor. So yeah, certainly it's not in my 5-year plan or necessarily ever. But yeah, I mean, I think you sort of, you know, you think about other things that you enjoy. I mean, actually, I love jewelry too. And I always thought if I didn't work in fashion, I would have, I don't know, worked at an auction house.
Yeah. And you've collaborated as well. So you have created, you know, you've put beautiful things together. So we'll watch the space. We'll watch the space. And the new Bulgari pop-up is downstairs as well. And there's somebody who you've worked with as well. And so let's talk about Gareth. Let's talk about the minimalist in you then. And you are, you know, if one was to define your style, it has been defined as that minimal but edgy style. Have you taken minimalism out of the wardrobe then? You know, people are embracing it in terms of their relationships, what they have in their home. Are you a complete minimalist?
I mean, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, my 4-year-old daughter she is certainly a maximalist.
Yes.
So it's been interesting in sort of, you know, seeing what her choices are in clothes. And, you know, she loves pink, she loves purple, she loves tutus and dressing up and costumes and tiaras, as I'm sure all 4-year-old little girls do. But I remember up until, you know, the age where she could turn around and say, no, mama, I want to wear a dress. I used to dress her in literally, you know, kind of gray and beige and white and maybe a very, very soft pink.
Yeah.
And I used to put her in like, I don't know, like cashmere tracksuit bottoms and a little cute t-shirt and a cute jacket. Like, I suppose like a mini me, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's been interesting now that she's old enough to have an opinion on what she wants to wear. And it's like,
I know, and is your house filled with primary colored plastic that makes noise?
Yeah,
oh my God.
Of course. And you sort of think that's never going to happen. You sort of think, I'm just going to buy her chic wooden toys.
Exactly. And I mean, they'll stay in a corner too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And now it's like, of course, there's plastic and talking unicorns and, everything else that goes
with
it.
But it's fabulous.
It's fun.
And in terms of, you know, the sustainability, I feel so. I have little girls too. And they grow out of things so quickly, but yet you want choice and you want a selection for them. Yeah. So it's really hard to be sustainable in terms of kids' clothing.
Yeah.
Unless you go for unisex and share it and, you know. What's your approach to it?
Well, I always try and buy her clothes that will last her at least 18 months, two years.
Size,
you
know, like, size up.
Yeah, always. A size or two up. You know, her winter coats, I always buy really big so that they last her, you know, a couple of years at least. But yeah, I mean, it's hard. And I think I just, you know, I go through her clothes quite often and I sort things through and, you know, I always give it back to charity. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just about, you know, repurposing or giving stuff to friends who have had babies. Yeah. You know, because some of these clothes she's probably worn about three times. Like, it kills me.
Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, and I think a community does start to develop around you where you share and you pass on. And that has to happen. And in terms of your own wardrobe, is that something you're conscious of? Do you resell, repurpose?
Yeah, I mean, I've always shopped really carefully, I think. I never really buy anything unless I think, okay, am I going to love it? Certainly, am I going to love it next season, next year, in 5 years, in maybe 10 years, forever? Yeah. I don't know. You know, I never want anything for just one season only. So I try, I'm quite a careful shopper, I think. Mm-hmm.
What do you think then the future of the fashion industry looks like? Because we are all more conscious and we are all being cognizant of the use and the longevity of our clothing. Where does the fashion industry or retail stand then in 10 years' time? What's it going to look like?
I mean, I think it's made really good progress in the last couple of years. You know, I think what was happening with COP26 has been really interesting for the industry. And I feel like lots of brands now, lots of young designers, you talk to them all and sustainability is really built into their to their brands and to their production practices. And you know, I think what Federico Marchetti has done working with Prince of Wales in his fashion task force is really interesting. They've done this sort of digital ID, which is going to be built into product so that the consumer can actually trace every element of production of that item.
Amazing.
So that just so that they're better informed as to where they put their money, what they buy.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like progress is happening. And you know, look at Gabriella Hearst at Chloe, who I think was a really great hire.
Mm-hmm.
She's really the queen of sustainability. You know, she's using recycled leathers and she's, you know, she's really making huge strides. And that's at a very high-end luxury level. So, I sort of feel like, and Hermes too are making great.
So that it
forward.
Might all trickle down then, you know, those
practices.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, I think it has to at this point, you know. I think it really has to. I think, you know, we can't go on as we have been.
I feel you were always that way, but did becoming a mom change your mindset on it even more?
Yeah, a little bit, because of course you do naturally think, okay, you know, what is the planet going to be like?
What's
in
her world or for
20
her
years time for her kids? Or I mean, even for her, you know, I think in her lifetime, you know,
I think they'll physically,
sure.
they're, you know, they're, it will be warmer for sure, you know, and there will be physical impacts, but you know, you want to stop that as much as possible.
Yeah.
What about the juggle of being a mom then, with that crazy busy role you have, and now, you know, a 4-year-old? What's life like? How do you manage it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure it's the same for all working mums. You know, it's hard, but you do the best you can.
Yeah.
You know, I think the hardest thing is to, you know, I try and be home by 6:30 because that's what time our great nanny leaves. And then I try and not be on my phone sort of between 6:30 and 8:30. But it's a struggle.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm still answering emails. So I try and sort of not be on my phone between those hours. And then I sort of pick up again at 8:30 if I have to answer anything on email, or if I have to make a phone call, or if I have to talk to an office in New York, or then I might work a bit into the evening.
So 9 to 5 it's not okay.
Yeah.
And so you're here today because of our wonderful new accessories haul in Brent Thomas. So you've picked a couple of key bits, so tell me about what most stood out to you tonight.
I've picked lots of bits.
I couldn't
narrow my edit down, so we might have to look at that in a bit because I've picked a lot.
That's good.
But it's great, isn't it? It's really great.
It's beautiful.
There's some really good pieces.
Yeah.
I'm really into all the crystal pieces right now.
Yeah.
I love the sort of crystal Bottega Veneta shoe, and there's a the Prada bag, which I know has just been selling out left, right, and center. But yeah, there are some really great pieces down there.
Okay, and in terms of you, okay, so if you're to share and pass down to Dree, what are the key pieces in your wardrobe that you're keeping for her? She's so lucky, by the way.
She probably won't want any of it, to be honest. She'll probably be like, oh, no.
Yeah, thanks, I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I have kept lots of pieces. You know, there are some good Gucci gowns.
Wow.
There are some good old Yves Saint Laurent pieces that I've got. Some Chanel bags.
And that collection will keep growing.
Yeah, it does. It keeps growing. A little bit of jewelry, maybe a Birkin.
Oh, that's fab.
But like I said, she will probably not want any of it.
I'm sure. Somebody will, I promise you. And in terms of, you're so well known for your collection of jeans. How many, you haven't counted, I'm sure, but like, what are you on about?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, talking about sustainability and not buying too much stuff. I mean, listen, I just think if you still wear it all, then it's great. Yeah. If you don't wear it, then pass it on. But yeah, I do. I have quite a big collection of jeans. I don't know, 60, maybe 60.
And have you a go-to brand?
I love Paige.
Yeah.
I love her jeans. I think they're really great. What else do I like? I mean, I have lots of brands. Mother, I think, is a really nice denim brand. Victoria Beckham, I like her.
She's great.
I like her denim a lot. Redone, I think, is really nice.
And again, the sustainability element of that is amazing what they've done.
Yeah, exactly.
And for you, okay, so you had a little mooch around earlier. Is there anything on your wish list now?
There's so much on my wish list. I sort of came here thinking, yeah, I think I'm all set on my accessory front. And then you come here and see everything and you kind of want everything again. Yeah, there's lots. There's lots. The Bottega shoes.
Yeah.
All of the sort of hair accessories I'm really into. Yes. Everyone's got like a great scrunchie or
a nice
great
bow.
Hair clip or or like a little barrette.
You put up a lovely clip actually just on one of your recent posts. Beautiful.
In Balenciaga.
Well, let's talk about your hair. I have to talk about your hair. Every time I see the gray sprouting through my locks, I'm like, well, look at Sarah Harris. You know, it doesn't quite look the same though.
They're great.
You know, what age were you when you embraced the silver?
It wasn't really ever a sort of, oh, I'm going to do this and be silver. I don't know. It happened quite gradually. I started going gray 16, 17. And it was quite evenly spread. And I don't know. I sort of grew up watching my mum dye her hair. She went gray fairly young too. And I just remember her making these trips to the hairdresser like every 6 weeks, 8 weeks, getting it dyed back to brown and then like that silver of root regrowth. And I just thought, God, that is, you know, such a commitment. So it never really occurred to me to dye it, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then it just sort of got progressively grayer and grayer.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
You and Isabel pulling it off so well. Listen, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
And
thank you
we
for
are very
having
excited
me.
To see your collection downstairs. So
I can't wait to show you.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share and follow us on Official Brand Thomas on Instagram for more updates.